Oh, so how about them Yankees? Ah!
How about them Yankees?
Yes, I don't know.
I don't either.
It was what came to mind. So hi.
Hello. How are you? I'm good. How are you?
Oh, just dandy. It's just March dandy. 1st, according to everyone else's calendar.
I am so surprised at how quick February went. Like, compared to January, this month really actually went very quickly.
It only depends. Well, it went quickly for you because you're on your, 10,000th Shamrock Shake?
I've only had one. Thank you very much. I have some restraint. Well, at the time of recording, I've only had one. We'll see.
Have you won the McDonald's Mega Millions yet with how many you've...
No, not yet. But so March 1st, when you guys listen to this episode, I will post an update as to how many Shamrock Shakes I've had today. It might be
Please
more.
Do.
I really love Shamrock Shakes. I got so excited when I found out they were out already. I made like a huge public service announcement on my Facebook because I was so excited.
Alerting the masses.
And then
you're doing the Lord's work.
And then one of my friends said that they taste like grass and I got really upset.
Well, that's how they make them, right? They just pull clovers out of the ground and just stick them in a blender. That's how they get the green color, right?
No, they are mint flavored. Oh my God. But yeah, wow. I got personally offended.
So yeah, that's
offended.
Leaves. Guys, everybody, Sammy, leaves. Mint is leaves.
Not clovers, though, or shamrocks. I mean, it's just enough. Called that because of the color. They
it's
do
grass.
Not taste like grass.
It's glorified grass. It's tasty grass.
I got
grass.
So upset. I got, like, personally offended when she goes, they taste like, because one of my friends goes, what flavor are they? And my friend immediately comments with grass. And I was like, oh my God.
You didn't even have a chance.
That's so mean. You were attacking a vital part of my personality right there.
Oh my gosh. Well, I stand in solidarity with her because you identify
like
with a Shamrock Shake.
I mean, you know, we're millennials in the year 2020. We identify with some really stupid stuff. Because
Chalupa
you know,
Cabra, you.
I do like chalupas.
It's true. But,
So,
hi, hello. All right, so this is Conspiracies and Cryptids. If you don't already know, we usually cover conspiracies and cryptids, and that's what we're doing again today.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. Why else would you listen to this show? Were you looking for advice on your taxes? I mean, no,
I hope not, because I can barely do them myself. I mean, I did do them, and I got my tax return back already, so.
Oh, good.
So
I need to get
that.
On mine. That's nice. I'll get on mine. Get that back nice and... Yeah, get on your taxes. And guys, wash your hands. Don't forget, wash your hands.
Wash your hands, vaccinate your kids, spay and neuter your pets, you know, our
All
usual soap boxes.
Check out the list.
But yeah, so this is Conspiracies and Cryptids. Usually I talk about cryptids and Tessa talks about conspiracies, but for our fourth season, we're doing a swap a season and I'm covering conspiracy theories, which has basically turned into Sammy's History Corner. And Tessa covers cryptids that I surprisingly have never heard of, despite, you know, three seasons worth of doing them. So we're all over the board right now, you guys.
It depends on your Google search history, which cryptids pop up
Apparently,
when you search.
The
you know,
algorithm just... for me is just not working, but.
All right. So we have to shake a coin, a penny for our thoughts.
Yes.
And who picked last time?
I did. So it's your
you
turn.
You did. Okay. So then I picked this time. And so I shake at the coin. And let's see. I'm going to go with tails.
Okay.
Have you seen Sonic yet?
Yes.
Oh, it's Tails.
Yay.
Hey, look at that. I get
there
to go first.
Go.
Hey.
But yes, I have seen Sonic. I saw it opening night.
Nice.
I liked it. It was really good.
Good. Good. Fun. How fun. Okay. So, I can't wait to see it. I really want to see it. So, I saw Parasite too. Oh my God. That was so good.
I heard that was really good. I need to see that.
So good. Well, anyway, we'll talk about it in the break. Two episodes ago, we talked about the Pope-like monster near Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes.
And during my research for that, I came across another cryptid sighting that also piqued my interest. I was like, noted.
Okay. All right.
Saving it. for later. And now is later. So break out your candy, Halloween trick-or-treaters. So usually when we talk about or think about aliens, we picture the stereotypical gray men, right?
Yes.
You know, I usually picture them like super tall, you know, thanks M. Night Shyamalan.
Graylians.
Scarring that in my head that's like, you know, aliens, right? Okay, well, these guys are of a significantly shorter stature, and they're actually they have inspired the other very familiar versions of aliens that we know as little green men, like the Flintstones' Great Gazoo and the Toy Story fellas like the Claw. So we are going to talk about the Hopkinsville Goblins.
Oh, I've heard. Okay, so I have actually heard of this one, but I haven't ever done research on it, so I'm excited.
This was actually very interesting because this story is widely regarded as the most significant and one of the most well-documented cases in the history of UFO incidents. Aren't they all? They all are.
They always say that. They're like, this is the most well-documented, and then it has like a paragraph of documentation.
Exactly. There's no pictures. They're like, oh yeah, there's like tons of pictures of the crime scene, but we're not going to like show them to you.
We're not going to show them to you.
You know, everything's declassified and, you know, but not this stuff. Right.
I hate that.
Okay. But the year is 1955, like around August time, somewhere between Kelly, like a little hamlet of Kelly and the town of Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Okay.
12 people went to the local police station with quite a story. We've got a big family to keep track of, so I'm going to try to simplify this. You won't have to remember too many of these names, though, so like, you don't have to pay like super close attention, guys. Don't take notes, you know. But listen, because you like the sound of my voice. So we've got Glennie Lankford and her kids, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary. Plus her two adult sons from a previous marriage, Elmer, Lucky Sutton, and John Charlie or JC Sutton, and their respective wives, Vera and Aileen, plus Aileen's brother, OP Baker, and some family friends, Billy Ray Taylor and his wife, June. Billy Ray, June, Lucky, and Vera were reportedly carnival workers that were visiting the farmhouse at the time. So they're kind of used to weird stuff, right?
I mean, yeah, carnies are weird stuff.
So exactly. So they're like, you know, you throw a bearded lady at them and they're like, we got this.
Yeah.
Like,
so,
or, you know, like an extra, like a strong man. Like, what strange things to put in a circus.
I mean, honestly, we've talked about stuff like this before with like P.T. Barnum and how just horribly they treated people that were just different looking or, you know, had birth defects. And it's like, yes, they're very interesting because of their defects and their unique or their unique qualities, but that doesn't mean that we should just put them on display.
Exactly.
I mean, unless it's consensual, you know.
Humans as a species are slow processors. We learn things very, very slowly.
No, I mean, you know, so I mean, unless it's consensual. So if they're consensual carnies, then we'll go for it. But if they're not, if they're non-consensual carnies, then, you know, they should not be up on stage for everybody's enjoyment. That's just dehumanizing.
Exactly. So anyway, I don't know exactly what these guys did with the carnival, but they were used to some stuff. So, but around 7 p.m., Billy Ray Taylor heads outside for a glass of water at the pump. And while he's out there, he spots a UFO. There's like this disc-shaped thing that lands in the field nearby with lights in all kinds of colors. And he's like, oh my gosh. So he like runs inside to tell the people and nobody believes him, saying he probably saw a meteor shower. They're like, yeah, Billy Ray, just settle down. Billy Ray, you just drink your water.
you and your achy breaky mental breakdown.
Exactly. So he runs back into the house to tell people. They don't believe him. Mm-hmm. But then about an hour later, strange noises start getting louder from the distance, and the family dog takes off under the porch and just nopes out until morning. Dog's just like, out.
That's never a good sign.
So Billy Ray and Elmer go outside to check and find a strange creature in the nearby trees. Like, the guys don't even get off the porch. So they're just like, there it is. It's like right there and it's staring at us and it's like glowing and small. But when it got about 20 feet away from them, they shot at it because that's what people do when we see things we don't understand. We just shoot at it.
Especially in America.
It's Kentucky. Come on. That's how we shake hands. So the thing ducked off into the woods, and we do not shake hands that way in Kentucky. I'm sorry, Kentucky. Don't hurt. I'm sorry.
Please don't judge us too harshly. A Kentucky handshake.
How you doing? Oh, man. Anyway, it ducked off into the woods and they went to step off the porch. They saw another one of the creatures that was perched up on an awning on the house and they shot at that too. And they noted, like, when a bullet hit it, it went ba-dink, and it like a bullet hitting a bucket.
Like, so it was like, ding. Okay, interesting.
You know? Or, you know, you kind of shot at something on an awning. You think the bullet maybe hit the gutter. Come on, guys.
Maybe.
If they had gutters, who knows? It was 1955, maybe. So.
Yes.
Anyway, they say soon after, these little men were like gremlins, surrounded the house, attempting to get inside, repeatedly popping up in windows and banging on the doors. So it was like playing whack-a-mole with these things, like, oh, they're over here, now they're over here, now they're over here, now they're over there, now they're under the roof, now they're under, you know, under the house, now they're, you know, in the kitchen. And I thought, like, weren't there were like seven kids that were part of this whole family? And it's like, are you sure they weren't like, I froed up. I need a glass of water. Like,
I froed up.
You know, kids all night long, you know, getting their parents up and like they're little gremlins. Anyway, right.
Kids are gremlins.
These things were freaking out the kids, and the kids were obviously like getting really upset and telling their parents, like, it's in this window, it's in this window. So that also remains to be seen how many of these things there actually were.
Right.
But two of the men, John Sutton and Billy Ray Taylor, again with the Billy Ray Taylor, he is so involved in this. They say that they fought off the beast with a shotgun and a pistol for more than 4 hours before one of them left to call police.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So they had like a standoff with them.
Yeah. And they were like, these things will not leave us alone. Anytime they shot them, they would just like go flying off in circles into the bushes. Or sometimes they would like the bullet would hit them and then they would like float to the ground, which we'll talk about in a little bit in their description.
Interesting.
Very strange. I know what you're thinking. But hold on to it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to hold on to that.
Anyway, they reported that the police, that the creatures were short and monkey-like with arms that were like almost atrophied. Like there were like no muscles in their forearms, and they had webbed hands with talons and large, bright, offset eyes and pointed ears. Hmm. And they were very small.
Okay.
So entertaining the report and fearing that these people had a shootout with real people, the police investigated the incident. They're like, a bunch of people just showed up at the police station saying they had a shootout with goblins. We might want to go make sure those weren't neighbors. Whoops.
That'd be quite the police report to have to take. Like, we just had a shootout with goblins. I'm sorry.
Boy.
What?
And you can kind of see how bored they were because, and by police, I mean they sent 4 city police, 5 state troopers, 3 deputy sheriffs, and 4 military police from the nearby U.S. Army Fort Campbell. There were 20 officers total that went to go check this thing out.
Oh, my God. Okay, either they were really bored or the people were really convincing with their story. Or they just came out for the fact that we heard the word shoot off and were like, oh, we need to take this seriously.
Safety's off, boys. Right. So they all go out there. They say that they found no tracks outside the farmhouse, and the only evidence that they found of a gunfight was inside the house, because obviously one of them fired at one of the goblins and just busted a window. It was just like, you know.
Okay.
So, because, you know, you have to open it. Can you imagine what the women were saying? They were probably screaming like, oh, my God, my window. I just cleaned that.
Maybe.
At the time. It was 1955, so.
Yes, women were housewives at the time.
Exactly. But the house and the surrounding grounds were extensively damaged, though, during the incident. So, oh God, I'm so sorry, ladies. And there's no doubt that at least the shooting rampage happened on the property. So no matter what, goblins or not, somebody like went berserk in this place. The police left, though, and a few hours later, at about 2:15 a.m., the little beast returned and Billy Ray fired at them again, breaking another window.
Oh,
Billy Ray. Jeez. You're gonna pay for all these windows, Billy Ray? You're like a carnival worker. You're just visiting and you're just like, I'm gonna shoot some windows. I just need an excuse to shoot some windows.
Oh, Billy Ray.
Another completely unrelated officer, though, nearby in Kelly, had reported a meteor shower in the area that night, but claimed he didn't see a saucer. He also, though, reported artillery-like fire sounds coming from the distance.
Oh. Okay.
Probably from the shootout happening at the Sutton place.
Possibly. Very, very possibly. Yes.
Okay. Neighbors also reported seeing strange lights and sounds coming from the direction of the farmhouse that night. Again, there was a shootout over there. Yeah, so.
And, you know, gunfire makes lights and sounds, so it's... It's very possible that that's what happened.
Very possible. They say, though, that even more than a decade later, all of the witnesses' testimonies matched up and held through questioning. And it's worth noting that the story dragged up a lot of attention for all the parties involved. So if they made this up, they got some pretty public consequences on a pretty massive scale.
Right.
But Project Blue Book, though, even listed the case as a hoax with no further comment.
Right. Project Blue Book is super interesting. I was going to talk about that this week, but as I do, I change my topics like last minute.
You always do that to me.
Well, the thing is like, quick little caveat, Project Blue Book isn't really so much a conspiracy theory. It's a very well-documented project that our government did research into UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. And like I said, it's very well-documented. All the documents are unclassified, so you can easily go and research this for yourself. Now, granted, we don't know if maybe they kept some documents secret, but as far as we know, it's not really a conspiracy. It's just this was a thing that happened. So anyway, keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
Exactly. So let's see. Where was I?
Project Blue Book said it was a hoax.
Blue Book. Okay. So as I mentioned in the intro to the topic, the Hopkinsville goblins are often considered part of the popularization of the little green men used as a generic term for aliens, despite the color green never actually being mentioned in the original story. They actually told the cops that they were either gray or metallic or wearing something metallic, but they didn't, the things themselves actually glowed. So they were like, oh, make him green. Sure.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, most glow in the dark stuff glows green.
Exactly. Exactly. Like that kind of like nuclear kind of
radioactive
neon color.
Sort of color. Yeah.
But the rest of the description, they're also short, about 2 to 4 feet tall. They're monkey-like. They've got long arms that are kind of atrophied, that don't have a lot of muscle on them. They have webbed hands with talons. So they've got these like really big hands on the end with these like really long claws. So they could like kind of swipe left, swipe right. They also have large offset bright eyes, these huge pointed ears. Okay. And then also, I thought this was interesting. The legs were atrophied to the point of uselessness. The creatures would move with a weird hip swaying motion as if through water and like kind of hovering over the ground, steering with their arms. And when they were shot, they would float, not fall to the ground. So they would just kind of...
They kind of shimmy through the air and sashay
exactly.
across the field.
And then you like blow one away and they're all like Keanu Reeves in the Matrix.
In the Matrix.
Float down, but they just aren't as successful and you know, well balanced as Keanu Reeves, and he just falls over.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. So, they definitely sound more like goblins though than aliens, especially with the pointed ears and stuff.
Exactly. Let me show you this picture. These were some alien drawings by the Sutton family.
Okay.
They're so weird looking.
Oh, those are weird looking. And they all kind of have the same sort of general appearance, so it definitely corroborates with each other's.
Exactly. They all are roughly pretty much the same. So
yeah, a couple little details here and there are different, but the main like silhouette is there in all of them.
Exactly. In fact, somebody else pointed out something that was kind of interesting. There was a radio DJ that interviewed the 7 adults of the original reporting party, and they said that their statements were pretty consistent, especially in their description of the glowing beings, you know, specifically, you know, the event itself, but specifically those things.
Right.
However, he mentioned, though, that the women tended to describe the creatures with a huskier build than the men did. So interpret that as you will.
I mean, yeah, that just sounds like, you know,
they were monsters. Squash the bugs.
Exactly. That sounds more like, you know, a masculine sort of thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to look at them as beneath me because, you know,
exactly.
That helps me get past my fear sort of thing.
You see, though, how masculinity and how that like plays a role in how we tell our stories and how things get like kind of bastardized over the years, and changed.
Just look at the you know, the way that women look at things versus how men look at them, it's so completely different. So it's interesting that they had the two points of view from multiple parties that they could compare and contrast them with.
One ufologist named Jerome Clark even expanded on the description, but I'm kind of not sure how, because he wasn't there, considering he's not part of the original reporting party, but okay.
Guys, I wrote a really good fan fiction about this.
Exactly. He wrote though, that these supposed creatures did float through the air and through the trees, and the sound of the bullet striking them mimicked that of a bullet hitting a bucket. But he also described an odd luminous green patch along a fence where one of the beings had allegedly been shot, but the description of the substance is pretty close to that of foxfire, which is a bioluminescent fungus that grows on decaying wood. So okay. This guy's like, oh yeah, and then there was this green alien sludge blood off in the distance, and it's like, yeah, there's some fungus that does this. There's some fungus among us.
Oh my god, stop.
No.
Stop.
No.
Stop.
No. The same guy that was also claimed that the U.S. Air Force and nearby officers found no evidence of a hoax, but the original report, if you'll remember, the Air Force didn't even investigate. It was allegedly four men from the nearby Army base. So either he is confused, we're confused, they're confused, or someone is lying.
Well, I mean, Project Blue Book was an Air Force project, so they may have investigated it at a later date as part of Project Blue Book.
True. So I'm confused. Somebody's confused. So speaking of rumors spread by people who weren't even there,
Two details,
like I mentioned, the green, the green color was one. And then, there was also a detail that was born out of the telling and retelling and retelling of the story. The original reports never mentioned anything about being green. Mm-hmm. The original party said when the things were popping up the window, it was like one here, one there, one here, one there, one here, one there, two here, two there, one there, one, two, in the windows, but never more than one or two at a time.
Okay.
But the media took that as there were 15, 12 or 15 of them.
There were dozens of them, yeah.
But they never actually saw more than one or two.
Gotcha.
So there could have been an army of them, but it seems like...
Or it could have just been a couple of them that moved really fast.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Also, a quick nod to pop culture. If you need a better picture in your head, listeners, the Pokemon... Maybe you can help me say this.
LGM?
No. No? Sableye?
Oh, Sableye. Yeah.
Introduced in Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire is actually based on the description of the Kelly Hopkins villain counter.
I did not know that.
Even down to their gait, the swaying or waiting motion it does is based on the creature's reported gait.
It does move like that.
Yeah. So one thing is for sure, though, we certainly don't know what the heck these things wanted to begin with, or whether they were acting out of curiosity or malevolence, because they were just kind of playfully. They never actually hurt anybody.
Hmm.
They were just kind of weird looking, and they were just kind of playing peekaboo with the kids, basically. So kind of strange.
Yeah.
So what could it be? Obviously, not everyone believed the attackers were spacemen. Some suggested that they were test flight monkeys used in rocket experiments that crashed in the area. Hmm. You know, I like to go with the most plausible thing first.
True. Yeah.
That's,
yep.
Let's be real here, guys. Another rather tongue-in-cheek explanation came from a Senate Republican memo published by the Senate GOP Policy Committee, saying that the visitors were simply Democrats turned green with envy at the popularity of Ike.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Could also be an elaborate hoax. People corroborate stories all the time.
Yep.
Could be great horned owls. Like I said,
Once again,
what you're thinking. With the floating to the ground, and that's what it could be. And they're freaky looking, and they screech. And if you've heard in our other episode, they are sound insane.
How many cryptids is this now that can be blamed on owls? I think this is five.
I feel like I could do an episode just on owls, and then we'll just cover all the conspiracies and cryptids around owls. Because when it really comes down to it, birds aren't real.
They aren't real. We've already talked about that. Oh my god.
So all of these are just manufactured. I'm sorry to say it, guys. There, I cracked the code. We never have to do another episode. Everybody go home.
All cryptids are just birds, which are conspiracies because they're all fake. So we've just concluded our podcast. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you so much. Please donate.
This was unintentionally the series finale. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Some say the incident could be blamed on intoxication, right? You're like, oh my God, that many adults in Kentucky and at a farmhouse in the middle of the night. Anything could happen. Yeah. He went out for water.
Bring in that carny moonshine.
Exactly. But even the police report says, quote, by all accounts, the witnesses were deemed sane, not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and in such a state of terror that no one involved doubted that they had seen something far beyond their ken. So even the cops were like, these people are stone cold sober.
Oh, okay. And well, that's interesting.
So that's also kind of that. Yeah. So who knows? The Sutton family did face a lot of media attention after this, fighting off trespassers as a tourist attraction until they finally started charging people to discourage them to come over. They were like, okay, we're going to charge you as much as possible so you stay the hell off our property. And of course, you know, ufologists are fans. They're like, okay, sure, we'll pay it.
Yeah.
But then the people that are, you know, obviously trying to say that they're like, this is a hoax, or like, okay, great, well, you're just trying to make money on this, so you know, screw you even harder. And they were like, okay, fine, everybody off our property, we're never talking about this again, don't ask, don't come anywhere near us.
Oh, no.
Stay away from us. So they have like completely shut everything down and just refused to talk publicly about it ever again.
Are any of them still alive?
That I don't know. I'm sure. I didn't look that far into it and stuff. I imagine so. The movie's only 1955. I imagine some of the matriarchs and stuff are probably gone.
Right.
But this event is a big part of the town culture in Kelly, Kentucky. They celebrate the anniversary of the event on the third weekend of every August with the Kelly Little Green Men Days.
Aw.
So there's a whole parade.
That's cute.
Isn't
that's
it?
Up in Kentucky.
It's up in Kentucky.
God, I want to know how far away that is for me. Can I just drive there?
That's true. It's in August, so you could probably
go check that out. I've got time to plan
out
a trip. What is the name of the town? Kelly something?
Kelly, Kentucky.
It's about an 8.5-hour drive.
Oh.
It's just up past Nashville.
It's like here to Disneyland if I drive slow.
Really slow.
Well, I'm pretty sure Sacramento don't drive to like Disney. A maniac, Jesus.
Sacramento to Disneyland is about 7 hours.
That's exactly 8 hours.
8.5 hours versus that's a whole hour and a half farther. That's like to San Diego, maybe.
I gotta go stop and see my family first, so I gotta go do the big loop.
I guess, but okay. Well, that was super interesting, and I love it.
I hope I blew your mind.
The fact that it, you know, has ties to Pokemon made it even more exciting for me.
I thought that was super cool. I was like, oh, hey, a cryptid in Pokemon. So
I do love me some Pokemon. And Sableye, he's a cute little guy. The one that I mentioned, LGM, is another Pokemon that's an alien type Pokemon. And its name is like a play on Little Green Men, LGM.
Cute. So, that is cute. I didn't run across that one, but that is very cute. So now there's two. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Take that. All right. So is it break time? And then we'll get some. Oh.
It is break time. And then I will talk about the conspiracy theory that I finally landed on after ditching Project Blue Book.
Nice. So. Can't wait.
So, Tess, you know what happened over the course of the last week?
What happened?
We got 4 new patrons
We
have to say thank you to because
more
they are
generous people.
More amazingly generous people who decided that we were worth their time and a small portion of their paycheck.
Oh my gosh. And thank you so much. You guys rock.
We just want to say a huge thank you to all 4 of our brand new patrons. We've got Victoria. We have Noah. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's N-O-U-H-A. I'm pretty sure that's Noah. We have Carly. And then we have Jesse, and we want to just say a huge thank you and welcome to all 4 of you. At this point, we are actually able to pay for all of our subscriptions now to keep us running. So
breaking even.
Yeah, we are finally breaking even because of you guys. So thank you all so much for your support. It means the world to us. We just do this for fun, and the fact that you guys want to support us blows our minds, frankly.
Keep it up. Thank you so much. You guys are such rock stars, and keep telling your friends, whether they join the cause or not. We really love doing this for you guys. We really want to continue doing this for you guys. And this has been a just quite a fun hobby. So thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts. And we hope we really deliver for you.
Yeah. All right. So Like I said, I was going to talk about Project Blue Book, but I decided not to because, as I said before, that's not so much a conspiracy theory. It's a very well-documented thing that happened. And unlike MK Ultra, where it was well-documented to a degree and then was destroyed, we're pretty sure we have all the documentation for Project Blue Book. And you can actually go out and research it yourself. And it's very interesting. In fact, there's even a... An Amazon Prime series? I think it's on Amazon Prime, but there is a streaming series about Project Blue Book, and it's got like the guy who played Littlefinger in Game of Thrones in it. It's super interesting and really cool. So yeah, if you have a chance to check that out, definitely check it out. But so that's why I didn't decide to do that like I was going to originally. So I went to another historical based conspiracy, which is my absolute favorite. So, you know, and this one specifically, like, always fascinated me and terrified me because I remember learning about this as a child. So the concept of like an entire town of people just up and vanishing, leaving everything behind, just really creeps me out and gives me goosebumps. But what happened to the lost colony of Roanoke is
I love this story, is
so nobody knows what happened, and they left so few clues about what might have happened. So we're going to get into the history. So welcome back to Sammy's History Corner.
Although this is a fun one, a fun one though. I really like the story.
It's super interesting. And I actually learned a lot in my research that I didn't really know to start with. So like I knew the basis of it, but I didn't know all of it. And then the conspiracies are really interesting too. So for the history of the Roanoke colony, it's a colony that failed twice. So after a failed attempt to settle the colony on Roanoke Island, North Carolina in 1585 by a man named Ralph Lane, another attempt was made in 1587 by a man named John White. Now, both of these expeditions were paid for by the same person. And I don't think I wrote down that person's name. I did not. I should have written that down. But they were both.
Should have looked that up.
I should have looked that up.
What is this? Season 3?
Season 1.
Season 1.
So both of these expeditions were paid for by the same person. But the expeditions were led by different people and the colonization was led by different people. So the first one was 1585 and that failed and they all kind of left and kind of fled because there was a major drought going on at the time. Or not drought, a famine. So 2 years later in 1587, John White and his group of colonists tried again. Like I said, the first colonization failed due to a lack of resources and also less than amicable relationships with the Secotan Native American tribe in the area. So, and the strain between the tribe and the colonists wasn't only based on the colonization itself, but also because the colonists relied very heavily on the natives for food and supplies because of the famine. And they also brought smallpox with them.
So the
natives were not very happy with the 1585 colonists.
No.
For obvious reasons.
Obviously.
So very soon after the evacuation of the first colony, another attempt was made, like I said, in 1587, 2 years later, to establish a colony in the same general area, though not on Roanoke Island itself, due to the current climate with the Secotan tribe. So they were actually going to go and colonize a different island, but somehow ended up on Roanoke anyway. So once again, due to lack of supplies and resources and ongoing disputes with the Croatan tribe, the colonists were forced to stay on Roanoke Island instead of Croatan Island.
They were like, you stay over there.
Yeah.
You guys stay in your corner.
So basically,
think about what you did in your settlers.
Yeah. So basically the first settlers had problems with the Secotan tribe. The second colonists had problems with the Croatan tribe, but not as big of problems as with the Secotan tribe. So they decided to move over to Roanoke Island, where the relationships with the Secotans were not great, but they were better than they were with the Croatans.
Yeah.
Okay. So they went to Roanoke Island and then they sent John White back to England to beg for assistance. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the leader of their expedition. Yeah. He was like,
help us.
Yeah. So, and you know, he had family members that were part of his group, you know, that stayed on Roanoke Island. So he left Roanoke Island August 25th of 1587 and arrived in England a little over 2 months later on November 5th. Unfortunately, he got to England right as the Anglo-Spanish War was starting.
Oh, oops.
Right, with reports of the Spanish Armada mobilizing on England, and that prevented all ships from leaving the country. They put a countrywide ban on ships leaving the country. So he got there okay, but once he was there, he was kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. He tried to leave a number of times, but the ban on the ships leaving the country wasn't lifted until a year after the Spanish Armada was defeated in 1589.
Ooh.
So he wasn't able to return until August 18th of 1590, almost 3 years later to the day.
Oh boy.
So he was only supposed to be gone a couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, 2 months to get there, 2 months to get back, and then maybe like a month or two in England to get supplies to bring back with him.
Yeah, and he's going to get help. And he left everybody back there. Yeah.
It was supposed to be probably like a quick 6 month turnaround mm-hmm. of him going there, gathering supplies and maybe mm-hmm. more ships of supplies and coming right back. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't able to come back for 3 years.
Oh, God.
Yeah. When he finally did arrive on the island, he found the entire colony abandoned. Houses were dismantled. Anything that could be carried was gone. All like luggage and crates had been looted, and the word Croatoan was carved onto one of the fence posts at the entrance of the colony. Now, the colony had been fortified since he'd left, when that they aren't sure if that meant that they'd been fighting with the Native American tribes or not, but it had been fortified. But there weren't signs of a struggle. In fact, because
they just left.
Yeah. Now, like, as a kid, I was for some reason under the impression that they left in a hurry and there was still food on the table and, you know, things were like very suddenly. It looked like they'd left suddenly. No, from my research, no, it wasn't sudden. It looked like it was a very calm, planned out evacuation. You know, they packed everything up, dismantled houses, took everything that they possibly could need.
Wow.
And left very, very like,
this isn't working.
Out.
We are leaving. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't sudden like I was led to believe as a kid. Mm-hmm. John White assumed from the carving of Croatoan that this meant the settlers peacefully moved over to Croatoan Island, which was the island they were first supposed to settle. But he was unable to go search for them due to weather constraints and his inability to convince the crew to take him there, because this crew wasn't really his crew. He kind of.
Yeah.
Like jumped on with another crew that was already coming over to the new world.
Will you guys take me back? Yeah.
Yeah. And they took him back, but they weren't going to go out of their way to take him around looking for people. So they literally just left and kind of hoped for the best.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, because he couldn't convince them to go over to Croatoan Island. The weather was bad. They had other deadlines to meet and places to go. And they were like, we don't have time to just play taxi cab to you and take you around searching.
You're on your own.
So they literally just left and kind of hoped for the best for the settlers. Many investigations had been done over the centuries, including quite a few within 15 to 20 years afterwards, you know, like very soon afterwards, in hopes of finding evidence of the lost colonists. But there hasn't ever been anything concrete enough to say for sure what happened.
Wow.
And as it usually does, lack of evidence births conspiracy.
Of course.
So now we're going to get into those conspiracies, and they range from mild to wild and include ties to cryptids we've talked about in the past. And of course, our favorite scapegoat, witchcraft.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Either witchcraft or Satanism, you know, those are the two favorites that we always jump to. It's when in doubt, blame the witches and the Satanists.
That's always
the way to go.
The way to go.
The first conspiracy is the most common and most probable explanation of what has happened, and that's simply that the colonists were absorbed and integrated into the local Native American tribes. Mm-hmm. Either all of them went to one tribe, or they were dispersed out into all of the tribes in the area, because there were actually a few. There were more than just two or three tribes. There were actually quite a handful of them.
Yeah.
So this particular theory is actually the oldest one on the list, with the first mention of the idea dating back to 1605, which is only 15 years after the disappearance was discovered. So yeah, it was pretty quick that people were like, you know, this is probably what happened.
I imagine that was pretty common in like some areas.
It had happened before, and I'll get into that. But yeah, it had happened before that settlers had integrated into native tribes or had been taken captive into mm-hmm. native tribes and ended up intermarrying. Mm-hmm. So the reason that this is the most likely theory is partially due to the fact that at the time the area was facing one of the worst famines they'd ever had, like I'd mentioned. So the settlers probably ran out of supplies entirely and had to go to their native neighbors begging for help.
Yeah.
And like I said, integration of Europeans into native culture had been observed before, either by force or by choice. And when it did, Europeans actually were typically very reluctant to return to their former ways of living. It had been observed many times that even if they'd been taken by force, once they'd kind of lived with the Native Americans long enough, they grew more accustomed to that way of living than they ever were in, you know, quote unquote, civilized mm-hmm. society. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I found very interesting was that it was a more natural way of living and it came naturally to even the European settlers.
More mindful, like you said, more natural, a little more conscious about what you're using and why. Yeah. And,
probably just a simpler way of life too, you know?
Less to think about. Can you imagine being stressed out in that time? And then, then you go hang out
in
with
that
the
time. Yeah. Stressed out in that time probably equals early death, you know.
Exactly.
So I found that really interesting. So it had been observed before that, you know, Europeans did integrate either by choice or by force. And when they did, they kind of they stuck with it. They mm-hmm. didn't ever go back. Also, it's notable that throughout the years following, there were many sightings of people dressed in Native American clothing that were fair-skinned with light hair and eyes. With the earliest sightings of quote-unquote light-skinned natives from 1607, which is only 17 years after the initial disappearance.
Oh, wow.
The modern-day Hadaras tribe, which finds its origins in the 18th century, is believed to have originated from the Croatan tribe, and many of their people are lighter skinned with gray eyes and light hair. And the Hatteras themselves claim to be descendants of the Croatans and the Lost Settlers, though this hasn't ever been officially confirmed. Huh. Though these days, maybe it could be confirmed with DNA testing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything in my research that has been done yet, or maybe it has been and they're waiting on results. I don't know, but yeah. Another tribe that could possibly come from the integration of Native Americans and the settlers is the Lumbee tribe. And this tribe is native to North Carolina and their origins can't be completely pinned down outside of oral tradition.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, we don't really know where they came from either. And their oral traditions do link them to the lost settlers, as well as the fact that many of the families of this tribe share the surnames of the colonists' families, with their history having those names dating back to 1719.
Oh, wow.
So this tribe has been around for, you know, since 1719, mm-hmm. and that far back, they natively had the names of a lot of the missing settlers.
Can you imagine those poor settlers and poor John White? They think that he just abandoned them and just took off and went back to Spain. And he tried so hard to come back and they all just like, they had no choice.
They dispersed.
You live out the rest of your life thinking this dude just took off and he's just like, I came back.
And we couldn't find you. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts to think. And yeah, I mean, it's very possible that they dispersed to both of these tribes and that both of these tribes could be descendants of, you know, their native side and the settler side as well.
How interesting.
Yeah. Early settlers who met the Lumbee tribe also noted that there were many of them who were also fair skinned with light colored eyes and that they spoke English fluently upon initial contact.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's even more kind of proof that they had contact with settlers before. Mm-hmm. It also should be noted that due to the fact that Native Americans have a drastically higher rate of albinism than people of European descent, that could also explain light-skinned Native people that were seen.
Oh.
And that was something that I didn't know. But apparently Native Americans just have a higher chance of having albinism than Europeans do. So So that, like I said, that could be an explanation of the light-skinned natives that were seen as well. But we don't know. Any of those three are very possible. So the second theory on the list that's also very possible due to famine and the weather conditions is that the settlers were either cannibalized by local native tribes or were forced into cannibalism themselves. There's no real evidence that any of the tribes in the area had ever been cannibalistic. But once again, with famine and harsh weather, anything's possible when you're kind of backed into a corner. And a few of the tribes did believe in medicinal remedies that use ground up bones, which has been used as an explanation as to why there were never any bodies found.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's even though there's no documented evidence that any of the tribes were cannibalistic, like I said, when you're backed into a corner like that, you kind of resort to things, and it might not be on record, but it might have happened. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, like I said, it's also possible the Roanoke settlers cannibalized themselves. It wasn't unheard of. The Jamestown settlement in Virginia resorted to cannibalism in 1609 in order to survive. So
wow,
it's happened, you know. And then, I mean, even in California, there was the Donner Party. That
absolutely
some sources say that they resorted to cannibalism and others don't, but
yeah,
you know, it's
part of our history over here though.
Yeah. So, I mean, it happens. It's unfortunate and it's very sad when it does happen, but when you're in dire straits like that, your survival instincts kick in and you kind of just do what you have to do. And it's unfortunate, but possible. So in a caveat to this conspiracy theory relates to a cryptid we've talked about before known as the Wendigo, which is a creature from Native American mythology from this area. So these tribes believed in the Wendigo. For those of you who don't remember, Wendigos are born from people who resort to cannibalism. So according to this theory, the Roanoke settlers are still very much alive and roaming the North Carolina woods as the cannibalistic Wendigos.
So
that's an interesting theory, and it ties right back into an earlier episode, which I love doing that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think, is this the last? Yeah, this is the last one that I'm going to go into in depth. And this one's called the Dare Stones. So the Dare Stones are a collection of 48 stones found between 1937 and 1940 with inscriptions on them that were supposedly etched by Eleanor Dare and left as messages to her father, John White, who, as you'll remember, was the leader of that expedition. So, so Eleanor Dare was his daughter. And she was married to Ananias Dare. Ananias Dare.
Sounds like a romance novel.
Right. And then
the Roanoke colony with Ananias Dare.
Right. And they had their daughter at the Roanoke colony. She was the first child born there, and her name was Virginia. So, yes.
Do you think he dared her to do it?
Oh, my God. I swear to God, Tess, I'm going to stop this recording right now.
But flip this thing around.
Did a full 180. So the first stone was discovered by a man named Lewis Hammond in 1937, and it supposedly contains a message from Eleanor with the front stating that her husband Ananias and daughter Virginia died in 1591 and to relay the message to her father. And then the backside gives a fuller account of what happened after John White left to return to England in 1587. So I'm going to read what it says. It's not in the it's in the proper English for the time, but it's a little bit difficult to understand in modern English. So the back of the stone says, "Father, soon after you go for England, we came here. Only misery and war for 2 years. Above half dead these 2 years, more from sickness, being 24. A savage with a message of a ship came to us. Within a small space of time, they became frightened of revenge and ran all away. We believe it was not you. Soon after, the savages said spirits were angry. Suddenly, they murdered all save seven. My child and Ananias, too, were slain with much misery. Buried all near 4 miles east of this river upon a small hill. Names were written all there on a rock. Put this there also. If a savage shows this to you, we promised you would give them great plenty presents. EWD. And I will show you real. Yeah. So it's very interesting. little like story that's written onto it. And then I'll show you what the stone looked like.
Oh, wow.
So that's the first Dare stone.
Uh-huh.
So, and I need to remember to post stuff to our Instagram. Cause I didn't post last episode. So all of our stuff's going to get posted. I promise you guys. So anyway, so the stone was written in the correct spelling and writing style for Elizabethan time frame. So that much is very accurate. However, it can never truly be established if it is authentic. So basically, you know, whoever found this, it's very unlikely that they just hoaxed it because it's written very colloquially correct for the time that it was supposed to come from, you know, the 1590s. You know, like I said, the grammar was really weird and the way things are spelled is really weird, but I mean, it's old English, you know?
Yeah. Stuff evolves over time. Yeah. Absolutely.
Language has changed so much in that, you know, I mean, what, 500 years? So
they wouldn't be able to understand us at all. And we'd be technically speaking the same language.
Oh, absolutely. So over the next 3 years, 47 more stones were discovered in the area and as far south as Georgia, with each stone further expanding on the story of Eleanor Dare and her struggle to survive. One stone in particular spoke of her living in a cave for upwards of 6 years.
Whoa. Nobody gave her some paper in some of this time. Like, some paper, has to be etched on stones.
Like a pencil.
It's the most lasting of storage devices, I'd say. But geez.
Anyway, so the tale continued to get more elaborate and outlandish, and it kind of seemed like a fan fiction that got out of control as more stones were found and subsequently sold for profit.
Ah.
Yeah. The validity of the stones, including the first one, has long been under scrutiny, with all but the first being proved as forgeries.
Mm-hmm.
So 47 of the 48 stones have been proven to be hoaxes, but that first stone, they're not sure. They
interesting.
The Smithsonian said that one might actually be authentic. From what they can tell, that one might actually be real, but they're not. They just don't know for certain.
They just don't know. Interesting.
So the stones are currently cataloged and stored at the Brenau University in Gainesville, Georgia. They don't have them on display anymore, but they used to. You still can get permission to study them for like research and stuff like that, though. But from what I read, they're stored in an attic in this university in Gainesville, Georgia, because they don't want to put hoaxes on display or something like that.
You know, probably not best. Yeah. Unless you've got a big old label that says hoax.
So other theories that I'm going to just lightly touch on, I won't go into as much depth with these. Like I'll go into a little depth, but not as much. One is that this was the reason they vanished was because of an attempted return to England gone wrong. Basically, the survivors attempted to leave Gilligan's Island, either with a boat left over from the initial expedition or by crafting one from wood and supplies they had, and ultimately were lost at sea.
I have had 3-hour tour stuck in my head for like 3 days. And now I know why.
Because I was thinking about it.
Because you were thinking about it. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
We've mind melded over here. Okay. Another is that it was a Spanish attack. As I mentioned, Spain and England were at war with the Anglo-Spanish War. And there was a Spanish colony just south in Florida. So this theory simply is stating that the Spaniards traveled up to North Carolina and murdered them all or took them all prisoner. So that's
like, hey, they're fighting over there. You come here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people were still very patriotic to their European countries at the time.
It's true.
Another theory is that it was a native attack. According to John Smith. Yes, the John Smith that met Pocahontas.
What a guy.
He went looking for the Roanoke settlers, which is something I didn't know. But apparently one of the things he did when he came over here was search for the Roanoke settlers. And he met with the chief of the Powhatan tribe, who claimed to have killed them all as part of an attack on an enemy tribe because they were living with them. So basically, Chief Powhatan said, yeah, we killed the settlers, but mainly we were targeting the native tribe that they were living with, but we kind of just kind of killed everybody there.
Yeah. Whoops.
Smith even said in his report that Chief Powhatan produced items that were supposedly from the settlers, including a musket and a brass, like mortar and pestle.
Oh.
So, yeah. Mm. However, there's...
I mean, I imagine once they, like, packed up... It's pretty easy to pack up a camp and take out all their stuff if you've killed everyone, so...
Yeah, yeah. However, there's no bodies or archaeological evidence to prove this, and it sounds, to me, more like this was just English propaganda to make the natives look like savages.
True.
You know,
true.
Which was, that was our shtick, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If we can convince Europe that they're savages, then we can wipe them out without having a guilty conscience.
We're so clever.
So clever. Nobody could see what we were up to. Okay, so another theory. This one goes to witchcraft, like, you know, like we mentioned in a lot of them. This one has two branches, though, of what kinds of witchcraft. The first is that the Croatan tribe, which believed in witches and witchcraft, murdered the English settlers because they thought they were witches.
Oh.
And the second is that the settlers were victims of witches who, according to legend, lived in the woods in North Carolina.
Ah.
So either the settlers were witches or they were killed by witches. One or the
other. Either way, witches.
Either way, witches. Okay, so another theory on this list of mini theories is... just general mysticism. The Croatan beliefs at the time had other monsters and gods aside from the Wendigo that could be blamed for the disappearance of the Roanoke settlers. One belief is that the spirit of Roanoke Island itself absorbed the settlers into the land for being disrespectful or taking advantage of the earth's resources. So kind of a nature spirit.
Oh, God. So, can you imagine the earth just I'm just going to swallow you.
Just
like you're
sucks
done.
You up.
Just, yeah. You suck.
You so suck, I'm going to suck you up.
Yep.
A sucky spirit. Anyway. another is that the evil spirit known as the reptilian devil of the woods possessed members of the settlers and caused them to attack and kill one another. So basically this evil... reptile devil spirit possessed them and made them hate and kill each other.
Interesting.
And then the last one, and I don't even have any sort of description for this because it's just very straightforward. Disease.
Yeah.
Disease killed
them. Just disease. Yeah.
You know, I mean, as much as we like to talk about the fact that Europeans brought new diseases over and infected the Native Americans, the contrary was probably very true as well. You know, there were probably a lot of diseases here that Europeans had never experienced and didn't have immune systems built up to it either.
Yeah.
You know, so probably a lot of them died the same way, just maybe not to the extent that smallpox killed natives.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, true,
so
true.
It's very possible that, you know, or just other diseases that come from winters and famine, you know, like you've got pneumonia and tuberculosis and all sorts of stuff like that. There are a number of reasons they could have just died.
Absolutely.
Or disappeared. Okay. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about, this isn't so much a conspiracy. It's just a very interesting and coincidental connection. And it's the Croatoan connection.
Oh.
So this is, like I said, it's not a conspiracy theory. I mean, it kind of is, but not one with any real explanation.
Hmm.
The word Croatoan, which was carved onto the fence post, has been found in other mysterious disappearances throughout history. And I'm going to talk about a few of them.
Ooh.
So right before he died, Edgar Allan Poe disappeared for a short amount of time. When he was seen again, he was delirious. In his final state of delirium, right before his death, allegedly one of the last words he ever said was Croatoan.
Ooh, weird.
Poe's official cause of death is unknown, and his medical records and death certificate have been lost. So we'll never know what happened to him the night that he died.
Ooh.
But he did vanish for a while, and when he came back, he was super delirious and said Croatoan.
Weird. Ooh, I didn't know that. That's
There's
interesting.
More. That's not the only one. Mm. This was the creepiest part of my research, bar none. The word Croatoan was found scribbled in the journal of Amelia Earhart after her disappearance in 1937.
Ooh, that's also weird.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Ooh, this just like buttons it all up. Ooh.
Yes. The horror author Ambrose Bierce He slept in, or let's see. Okay. Let me restart this little section. The last bed that horror writer Ambrose Bierce slept in before he disappeared in Mexico in 1913 had the word Croatoan carved into one of the bedposts.
Oh, yep. My gosh.
I know. There's more. In 1888, famous stagecoach robber Black Bart carved the word Croatoan into the wall of his jail cell before he was released from prison and subsequently disappeared and was never heard from again.
Oh my.
And finally,
oh my gosh.
I know. And finally, in 1921, Croatoan was written on the last page of the logbook of the ship Carol A. Deering when it crashed on Cape Hatteras near Croatoan Island. The ship was missing its entire crew.
Oh my gosh. Just that's creepy.
Super creepy.
Oh my gosh. That's really creepy.
It's just, like I said, that was the creepiest thing I came across in my research. It's not really a conspiracy theory in and of itself. It's just, it's a weird, creepy coincidence that the word Croatoan is found a lot of famous disappearances.
This is true. This is weird. I want more info. That's really cool.
So
good find.
Yeah. So what happened to the settlers of Roanoke? Well, we'll probably never know. You know, the lack of evidence that could show us what happened, it prevents us from ever making a completely positive conclusion. And the further away we get from it in time, the harder it's going to be for us to actually figure out what happened.
Yeah.
You know, time erases everything. And eventually it's only been 500 years and we already can't figure out. It's not going to get any easier as time goes on.
No.
Like I said, though, the most plausible thing is that they integrated into local native tribes, intermarried, and became lost to history. But that is the lost colony of Roanoke.
That's very cool.
Thank you.
I didn't know, that was another one that piqued my interest, but didn't know very much about it. So that's really interesting.
No,
like you said, that like we tend to be sold the cannibalist story and the cannibalism story, and that they like left in a hurry and stuff, but that's really not the case.
Yeah. So. Like I remember learning about it in probably fifth or sixth grade in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but I've remember them telling us that they left in a hurry, that there was still food on the table, but it's like no, it was quite the opposite. It was a very, it looks like, as far as from what we can tell from John White's perspective, it was very planned and coordinated evacuation. They left they knew what they were doing. They dismantled houses, they kind of packed everything up and took off. It was not in a hurry. So very, very interesting and creepy and spooky. Just the fact that people just are lost to history. An entire colony of like 30 some people just gone, and we'll never know what happened to them.
Just like how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop.
the world may never know.
Well, thank you. That was really cool. Thank you for sharing. And I hope you guys at home and wherever you are enjoyed that as well. And well, what a fun topic.
Yeah. So we will be back again on the 15th of March with another conspiracy theory encrypted to regale you about. We hope that you guys will continue to listen to us and that you'll continue to share us with your friends. As we've mentioned before, one of the best way to get us to help us gain new followers and listeners is to just leave us a review on iTunes. It doesn't have to be a big fancy spiel about how great we are. We're not here to get our egos stroked. Just leave a review, you know, honest review, 1 to 5 stars, and just leave something as simple as Big Brother is watching, and we'll know that that meant that you reviewed us. So
do it for me this month. My birthday's on the 9th.
There you go.
And it's come, like, do it for me. Like, just come tell
Make
me happy
that
birthday.
Tessa's
That's all
birthday
you have to
present.
Do.
Give us a review on iTunes for Tessa's birthday.
I would really, really, really appreciate it. It's all I want. All right, guys. So we will be back, and we can't wait to bring you guys more conspiracies and cryptids for the Swappa season.
Yes. So, and as always, don't forget, Big Brother is watching.
And wash your hands.
I might leave that in.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Conspiracies and Cryptids with Sammy and Tessa. Don't forget to check out our website, www.conspiriesandcryptids.com, for more episodes and other information.
And if you're really enjoying what we're doing, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cryptipod. That's CRYPTIPOD. There you can find different ways to support us and get some awesome goodies along the way.
While you're at it, you can also find us on all of your favorite social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's any one of those at Cryptopod.
And if you're enjoying our podcast, please think about leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars and a nice little blurb about why you like us. It helps us to gain some traction and find some new listeners.
And while you're at it, don't forget to tell your friends, because our friends are your friends.
And don't forget, Big Brother is watching.